With tensions mounting, the United States on Monday released new images it said were proof of Iran's role in last week's oil tanker attacks in the Gulf of Oman. The U.S. military's Central Command said the images showed members of Iran's Revolutionary Guard removing an unexploded mine from the side of the Kokuka Courageous, one of two ships hit in the attacks. Tehran has denied any role in the incidents.
Egyptian state media are reporting that the country's former president, Mohamed Morsi, has died while in court on espionage charges. The cause of his death is currently unknown. It reportedly came soon after he fainted. Morsi was the country's first democratically elected president when he took power in 2012. But the mass protests that brought an end to the 30-year rule of his predecessor, Hosni Mubarak, soon plagued Morsi's leadership.
Germany's struggling lender, Deutsche Bank, has drawn up plans for a drastic restructuring to its trading operations, which will involve creating a so-called bad bank to hold over $56 billion of assets. That, according to a source close to the matter speaking on Monday, and a report in the Financial Times, which said that as part of the overhaul, the bank's equity and interest rate trading outside Europe would be shrunk or completely closed.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's June the 18th, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day getting underway. We appreciate you tuning in this morning. We've put together a good broadcast to get your business day going. We're going to talk a little bit about the impacts of climate change, the cost of climate change, and why the nearly $1 trillion potential price tag also has with it some huge opportunities for businesses. Bruno Sarda will be here, the president of CDP North America, formerly known as the Carbon Disclosure Project. We'll go over some of the numbers, talk about some of the trends in this area. He'll be up first this morning with that conversation. A little bit later this morning, Jillian Berman will be here from MarketWatch.com. There is a new report on student debt, a number of colleges, for-profit colleges, and others that were caught up in some scandal and other situations, reversing a student loan debt. We'll talk about the impact of that on not only the students, but the economy as well. All of that coming up this morning, plus news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move forward this hour here on 720 WGN. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell will ring this morning after stocks rose slightly on Wall Street yesterday ahead of the Federal Reserve meeting, which begins today. At the closing bell yesterday, the Dow Jones gained about 23 points. The NASDAQ was up 48. The S&P was up just 3 points. And this morning, as we look at the futures market, Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures, all up from 0.25% on the Dow to about 0.5% on the NASDAQ. Looking around the rest of the globe, in China, stocks up just a little bit. In Hong Kong, the Hang Seng is up nearly 0.5% this morning, 271 points. The Nikkei in Japan off about 0.75%. In Europe, in London, up nearly 0.5%, almost 40 points on the FTSE. The DAX is up nearly 100 points this morning. And in France, markets up more than 1%. The CAC is up 55 points. And oil in the United States is at $51.64 a barrel. As we begin this morning, a couple of headlines. FedEx increasing access to its services. The shipping giant said yesterday it'll offer drop-off and pickup services at Dollar General stores. The company says the move is designed to increase access for especially customers in the country. The service will start with the rollout in 1,500 Dollar General stores late this summer before increasing to more than 8,000 stores by the end of 2020. Facebook is set to reveal details today about its new cryptocurrency project, codenamed Libra. The new currency already has support from companies like Visa and PayPal. It's thought it will allow more than 2 billion users across Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp to make transactions without fees. Currency also will allow, reportedly be tied to traditional currencies to protect it from volatility. On the market calendar today, housing starts for May are due out. We'll have more of that coming up in the market outlook a little later in the broadcast today. Let's begin first, though, with climate change. Report says that climate change could cost companies nearly $1 trillion in all kinds of things, lost businesses, impacts to operations, that sort of thing. But it also means there could be some huge opportunities as well. And joining us this morning is Bruno Sarta, the president of CDP North America, formerly the Carbon Disclosure Project. Bruno, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Thanks. Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about this report, the cost of this. What are we talking about here? What kinds of companies will be impacted, and what does the cost look like?
Yeah, no, great question. You know, CDP, at its heart, you know, we launched the first systemic link between environmental and financial information back when we were founded nearly 20 years ago. And so our mission all along has been to try to connect, again, through the lens of capital and investment, how environmental issues in general and risks in particular could affect the value of investments or the performance of organizations. And so this latest report we just released is really the first look at the disclosure that many companies have made in accordance with what the Financial Stability Board described as the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures. This was introduced in 2017, and in 2018, CDP really aligned its global questionnaire to request this information from companies. So, you know, we get disclosures from over 7,000 companies around the globe, representing over 50% of global market cap. And what we saw was stark, one that, you know, truly organizations understand the problem of climate change is real, and it could be costly. Just to put it in context, this $1 trillion of risk is actually identified by a subset of organizations reporting to CDP, 215 large organizations to be exact. So even though it's a huge number, in fact, we see that it's only the tip of the iceberg. And also important, they disclose that they think these impacts will hit within the next 5 years. So this isn't, you know, looking out to 2030 or 2040. This is literally in, you know, in the current or upcoming business cycles, and impacting, as you mentioned, it could be just from business operations, impact, you know, losses to crops, increasing costs of certain projects, or things like stranded assets. Over $250 billion of that $1 trillion number is specifically tied to basically the loss of value, either partial or complete, of assets currently owned by these organizations.
Some major companies are included in the list here, so we're not talking about mom and pop stores. We're talking about some of the big companies as well. Microsoft, Apple, Visa, J.P. Morgan Chase all responded to the survey, and it shows that not only is it a little stark to say in the next 5 years that some of these costs will be developing some of these issues, but it's it also impacts just sort of the investment part of the story as well. If you're an investor in one of these companies, you have to be kind of sitting on your hands and being a little worried.
Yeah, you know, part of the value of disclosure and you know why early on, you know, CDP started with 35 investors asking us to request this information from companies. You know, nearly 20 years ago now, we operate on behalf of 525 investors who collectively manage about $96 trillion of assets. So it's a pretty big sample of investors who work with CDP asking us to request this information from companies. As you point out, you know, most large publicly traded organizations do complete this disclosure every year. Again, the good news is through disclosure, you know, we make these questions visible both to organizations themselves and to their investors. And many of these organizations, you mentioned some of their names, and there's plenty others, also then describe a lot of what they're doing to basically mitigate the exposure of these risks in their businesses, how they're transitioning to, in this case, you know, maybe lower carbon, more sustainable business practices, certainly more resilient practices in support of their operations in the U.S. as well as around the globe.
Yeah, Bruno, expand a little bit on that, because I think we've seen all kinds of stories ranging from companies being proactive about this to companies hesitant to do anything about climate change, or at least talk about it publicly. Give us a sense of what these, some of these companies who are being proactive are, what are they doing?
Yeah, you know, there's a variety of strategies, and it really depends on the nature, and this task force on climate-related financial disclosure that the Financial Stability Board had implemented. Actually, I, you know, tried to identify it across 22 different sectors of the economy, recognizing that, you know, if you're in the power sector, or if you're in the, you know, IT or food and agriculture, obviously your mitigation strategies will be different. One of the very common strategies we see certainly is the adoption of basically, you know, low carbon or carbon free energy in various portfolios. So the large IT companies, you know, moving to and many have committed to, for example, sourcing 100% of their electricity from renewable sources to really reduce their reliance on fossil fuel based energy systems that you know, are believed to be not only damaging to the climate, but in fact, very much at risk of climate-related exposure through things like, you know, extreme weather, flooding, etc. You know, others, frankly, the mitigation strategies could also be to diversify exposure from a just geographically. For example, back in about 2011, you know, there was massive flooding in Thailand as a result of some extreme weather that kind of crippled both the IT and the automotive industry because they had high concentrations of manufacturing of certain parts there and realized actually that that was, you know, too risky. It was efficient, but it was too risky. And so as a result, they, you know, they endeavored to then just make sure that they didn't source any, you know, any significant portion of any one part. In this case, you know, this was hard drives for the IT sector, for example. About 80% of the world's hard drives were made in this little part of Thailand that that was you know, prone to flooding. And so the you know, the mitigation strategy was, you know, let's make sure that we have, you know, manufacturing facilities in a variety of places so that no one event can basically bring down the sector for a while.
Bruno, I want to talk a little bit about that part of it now. On the benefit side of it, there are quite a few of them, aren't there?
Yes, for sure. You know, one of the things we've seen, you know, really firming up over the years is that, you know, the body of evidence is now solid that sustainable business is better business. And in fact, you know, many are calling this this kind of transition to the low carbon economy as the fourth industrial revolution. And we saw that, you know, certainly with the third and the information age. And for all of that, it disrupted when the internet came of age and all of what, you know, we saw in terms of the displacements that it creates so many opportunities that now we look back as a huge opportunity. And we certainly see this also with the low carbon transition. And the good news is actually businesses that, again, disclose to CDP on behalf of, or, you know, to their investors, is that they see the same thing. And actually for, you know, this $1 trillion of risk of inaction on climate change, business also says they see over $2 trillion of opportunity through action. So, you know, certainly the net takeaway is there's a massive cost to not doing something about climate change. But the good news is the opportunity is more than twice as big as the risk for those who act you know, wisely and swiftly.
Obviously, lots of investment potential there too. And in many cases, it's consumer preference that's going to drive some of this, isn't it? The companies will have really little choice if their consumers are demanding some of this.
Sure. Yeah, there's going to be lots of new, you know, products and service model opportunities and throughout, you know, the chain from, you know, new materials, new products, new offerings that have been, you know, dematerialized, decarbonized through this process. You know, the finance sector actually sees a tremendous opportunity as well out of this $2.1 trillion of opportunity that companies disclosed through CDP. You know, about half of that actually has been identified by the finance sector as basically a huge opportunity for them to finance and benefit from this this transition in the next 5 years or so. The other notable point is that they actually see a great return of investment. So this this $2.1 trillion in opportunity business has collectively identified about $311 billion of cost to achieve. So if they invest about $311 billion, they see a return of about just north of $2 trillion. So that's about a 7x return on that investment, which is certainly attractive.
You talk again about the 5-year window here. I know the UN talks about a 12-year window to avert climate disasters. So we've got a 5-year window and a 12-year window. Both of those tell us that we don't really have a lot of time to be talking about this. We have time for action is probably now.
Yes, certainly. I mean, climate change is, again, is an urgent problem that requires urgent action. At the same time, the good news is the solutions are here. You know, we don't need to invent the solutions that will really help us mitigate these risks and avert, the potential consequences or to go seize these opportunities. And in fact, we get plenty of examples from many organizations of, again, how they're well on their way to making these real, which is, you know, why they're comfortable disclosing this 5-year window, is that this isn't something distant in the future. They're executing on these strategies now, from, you know, regenerative agriculture to renewable energy to green chemistry and sustainable materials, circular economy. So it's an exciting time to be in business and to really lean into this transition to the low carbon economy.
Bruno, we appreciate you being with us this morning. Thank you for the insight and analysis of some of these numbers. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Steve.
Bruno Sarda, president of CDP North America, formerly the Carbon Disclosure Project. And you can find more online at cdp.net. That's cdp.net.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. Former for-profit college students will see millions of dollars in student debt canceled. Who's involved here and what are the schools? We'll be talking about that now in this segment. Jillian Berman is with us, a reporter at MarketWatch.com, who has been writing about this. Jillian, good morning and welcome to WGN.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, $168 million, I think, is the figure. Who are the students involved in this settlement?
Yeah, so these are students who attended ITT Technical Institutes and who had who participated in a private loan program known as QSO Loans. And so that's the debt that's going to be canceled. It's private loan debt that was part of this specific program.
Talk to us a little bit about why this debt is being canceled and a sense of just the size and scope of this.
Yeah, so basically the debt cancellation is coming through a combination of a settlement with this company QSO and the CFPB and 44 states' attorneys general. And then also ITT is in the midst of its bankruptcy right now. And so the bankruptcy trustee, also approved a settlement with QSO. Basically this company, along with ITT, was accused of pushing students into these high interest loans that they wouldn't be able to repay. And so that's why, the CFPB and these states kind of went after them and reached this settlement.
I know in your writing, the CFPB talked about this as being sort of a scheme. Was it as nefarious as that? And how widespread are programs like this in the for-profit world?
Yeah, so, I mean, what we know is that a lot of for-profit colleges that have now collapsed, had some kind of private loan program that, some have argued was predatory. So, for example, Corinthian Colleges which collapsed in 2015, had a private loan program, that also was in the crosshairs of regulators. This program, according to allegations from the CFPB, ITT created this program to help students kind of cover the gap between what federal student loans could cover and the full cost of tuition, and push students towards these loans, even though they had high interest rates. And ITT and this company QSO knew that the default rates for the portfolio would be pretty high.
This, I guess, for these, some of these students, this was probably a double whammy, wasn't it? Not only did they have the student loan debt, but when ITT Tech went bankrupt, that sort of left them high and dry, didn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, we've seen this several times over the past few years. Basically, these for-profit colleges collapse, usually amid scrutiny from regulators or others, and then they leave tens of thousands of students, kind of in the lurch. A lot of times the students have trouble transferring to different schools, and they can sort of face challenges continuing their education or getting any value really from their education. So yeah, they're left with, without a school and also still with the debt.
Right, and some of the, I know, as you write in the story, again, at MarketWatch.com, these students, a lot of them, this kind of wrecked their credit, didn't it?
Yeah, so, the part of the settlement is involves the loans being taken off of, the trade lines of their credit report, so that's a good thing. But yeah, in a lot of cases, the student loan debt, if you can't pay it back, just like any other loan, it can be very problematic for your credit.
How many of these for-profit colleges still exist today? Are they a dwindling number, or do they still exist in some large numbers?
There's still a lot of them around, but we have, over the past few years, seen many collapse, many sort of large chains collapse. So Columbia and ITT, a couple others. But they're definitely still around, sort of the height of their enrollment, when they had like kind of the highest enrollment numbers was in the Great Recession and kind of its wake. So, around 2010 and 2011, that's because during a recession, people tend to go back to school. So that was kind of like the height of their, power or, sort of their enrollment. And, it's been ticking down ever since. But there's still, a lot of students attending these schools.
What kind of cautionary tale should this be for students, potential students of some of these schools who are perhaps looking for student loans today?
Yeah, so I think, something that people always say is at any time that you are looking at a college and they are really trying to, sort of rush you, and in particular rush you to sign up for student loans, that, that should really be a red flag. That is something that, colleges with good outcomes generally will not be doing. And then there's a lot of resources that you can use to kind of try and assess whether a school is going to, offer you good outcomes. So there's this website the government provides called a college scorecard where students can look up schools and get a little bit more information about them. Honestly, in some cases, even a Google search just of the school might lend you a little bit of insight, because if schools have lawsuits against them or complaints or things like that, that might come up. So, those are some things to keep in mind.
Jillian, what has been the process at the Department of Education? I know there had been reports weeks ago that the department was moving very slowly about debt cancellation or forgiveness in some instances, and fighting it in others. What's the status of the Betsy DeVos's education department?
Yeah, so basically in 2016, the Obama administration, after some pressure from activists, created this process that borrowers who went to schools that basically defrauded them could use to have their student debt their federal student debt canceled. So it's an application process. You make a claim, and then if it's approved, your debt is canceled. But what we've heard is that at least, sort of the last report was, a few months ago, that a lot of these claims now are languishing at the Department of Education. So, people are filing claims, and they're not getting approved or denied. They're just kind of sitting there. And, you know, we know also that Betsy DeVos's Department of Education is, you know, has tried to rewrite this rule. So we know that it's not something that they exactly believe in. And, you know, so even in the case of these borrowers who have their private debt canceled, some of them may still have this federal debt hanging around that they can't get rid of.
Yeah. And does that also include students who went to schools where they would work in underprivileged areas and financially troubled areas that would help them to relieve some of their debt? Those folks having trouble as well?
Yes. So that's a different program. That program called Public Service Loan Forgiveness is for, you know, people who work in public service. And basically, if they do that and pay their loans for at least 10 years, then they can have the balance forgiven. You know, whether you qualify for that program has nothing to do with, you know, if your school was good. You can still do it if your school is a good school. But yes, there have been, you know, there have been some issues in terms of the number of borrowers who have had their applications for that program approved.
Jillian, we appreciate you being on this morning and sharing your reporting with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jillian Berman from MarketWatch.com. We're going to link out to her latest story on this as well, again, at MarketWatch.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, looks like we'll have a nice little bump here at The Opening Bell. Dow futures are up 99 points, nearly a third. S&P futures up now nearly 0.5%. NASDAQ futures up nearly 3/4 as we head to the opening bell. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. No big surprises in the USDA Monday afternoon reports. Let's look at the wheat crop first of all. Spring wheat, 77% in good to excellent condition. Winter wheat, 64% rated good to excellent. And harvest of winter wheat crop is now 8% complete. Then checking the corn-soybean situation, 59% of the corn crop rated good to excellent. That's the same as a year ago. And corn planted, 92%. They didn't get much planted in the last week. Normally by this date we have 100% planted. Soybeans, 77% planted compared to 60% a week ago, 93% for the 5-year average. But looking at the market trade yesterday, corn hitting a 5-year high as we saw corn prices move higher with the July corn crop up 1.5 cents at 454 3/4. July soybeans were up 13 1/4, and July wheat up 0.5 cents. Livestock futures were higher. I had green screens all over the marketplace yesterday. August lean hogs up $1.50 a hundredweight. August live cattle up $1.22, and August feeder cattle ended the day up $1.17. Just a reminder for our Dairy Farm listeners this morning. Yesterday, they opened the sign-up period for the improved insurance program for dairying that was created as part of the 2018 Farm Bill. You can now make your application to sign up for that improved insurance program. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Tuesday, June the 18th. Housing starts for May are out today. Housing industry analysts see some activity pulling back. Experts are forecasting a 2.4% decline after April's advance of more than 5.5%. That works out to an annual rate of nearly 1.2 million starts last month. Also today, earnings on the earnings calendar, Adobe and Lazy Boy Incorporated. The U.S. Senate will hold a hearing on tariffs. All that, some of the stuff that could move the markets on this Tuesday, June the 18th.